Jeff Steinhoff.
Want to echo what others have said about the important achievements of your group and very many noteworthy things. Your standard-setting priorities seem to make a lot of sense. Want to focus on one, and that's your action plan for reviewing the interim standards. Arnie spoke to looking at this in terms of a clean sheet. I think this is a good opportunity to go back. I think this is a very difficult issue. The board was faced with getting started, with taking what was there, and doesn't have an easy mechanism for changing what was there when it changes on its own. So some of these interim standards, as we've discussed before, have in fact changed in terms of the original standards themselves as promulgated by the AICPA. But I think it gives you, as Arnie said, a much broader opportunity to step back and say whether these are the right standards for the time. I was struck with the comment that Bob made earlier. He was referring to XBRL. It's really the broader issue in addition to that, to where technology is taking us today and the fact that information is available and reported in a much different manner, and whether auditing standards as developed by any standard setter, whether we're converging on the right thing or not, or whether we need to really rethink the entire paradigm here and have a different type of auditor who is much more savvy, much more aware of how information is managed and disseminated, and you might have a different set of standards altogether. You might, in fact, want to establish something through the board where you would be doing work in what I would call R&D, foresight work, thinking ahead 10 or 15 years as to how technology will take us in delivering information so that you're just not in a position of having to converge or having to just update someone else's standards, but be thinking about, you know, maybe new and different models for this. I was struck with a couple of the comments that folks made about, you know, the amount of investment. And, you know, I think you've just done tremendous work with the staffing you have. But these are a very extensive listing here. Just working on the interim standards is a tremendous project. So at some point in time, you know, the board might want to consider, you know, what is the proper mix, or how can the board leverage the other standards that are being set. And the PCOB takes on certain things and defers to others on certain other things where you're comfortable. In your opening, Tom, you mentioned the area of assessing risk. I just want to comment briefly on that. I think that still is a very difficult area. I think that a lot is not understood about fraud, and people do have difficulty, even if they want to, properly assessing fraud risk. And I am somewhat concerned that most auditors have a very much of a limit in their ability to conceptualize how fraud can be committed electronically outside the company, and how systems can be attacked. This is a big national defense issue in our country today. We're under attack every day in terms of other countries trying to attack our defense establishment. And this is something I think is going to be even a bigger area. And to what degree should auditors be aware of the critical issues that center around computer security?
Galen Hansen.
First of all, I want to thank you so much for inviting us here again. And the agenda materials are always so well prepared. It makes my life a little bit easier in terms of preparing for these meetings. I especially want to thank the PCAOB for issuing the small business guidance that came out yesterday. I've been tracking that closely, as you know, and I think it's really going to make a difference from what I can tell so far to the small business world. And I hope that that is well publicized, that the small firms are encouraged to really use that to the maximum. I also hope that the relative cost of complying with 404 going forward under AS5 using that guidance is monitored closely so that you all can respond to inquiries that you're getting on a regular basis from Congress now as to what those costs are. On the subject of education that has come up and been discussed, I do agree with Richard's comments. You know, this is a tough business to absorb all the things that you're to absorb, but I think it's also important to remember that what is the purpose of entry to the profession through the CPA exam. It's really the gateway to the profession, and it's the basic qualifications. And what are those standards? I couldn't help but pass up on Joe's comments about whether or not it's dangerous to leave education to the AICPA and state boards. You know, most states have now passed a 150-hour rule, but we have had a lot of difficulty figuring out how to fill that other 30 hours with definition. And, you know, that's been very, very discouraging as far as the Uniform Accountancy Act. You know, we're taking another pass at that. This time we are hopefully getting the university professors on board and their input, and I think we're going to be more successful at that going forward. But I still see the CPA examination is entry the profession, and if a specialty is needed, and the AICPA has specialties in a number of areas, and this one might be one, but I don't see it one for new staff people or seniors. This is a skill to practice in the SEC arena that has developed over a long period of time. When somebody passes the CPA exam, they're not ready to start signing audit reports. It takes a good period of time. So maybe that certification or credentialing is something that 10, 15 years down the road would be relevant, but not as a new staff person.
Lynn Turner.
On the education issue that a number of people have brought up around the table, I have recently surveyed a number of the leading academics in the country, including, I think, probably four current or prior chairs of the American Accounting Association, some of people who do writing in the area of international accounting, very esteemed professors for the most part. And I haven't got back all the responses yet, but I do have a number of them back, and they're all saying the same thing, that in the United States, there is literally no textbook to be used in the universities for teaching intermediate or advanced accounting as it relates to international accounting standards, and there's no textbook available to use to teach international auditing standards. And to date, none of them are aware of any university that is teaching those classes. It's not to say that one might exist someplace, but none of these are aware of it at all. So if you talk about international standards and you've got literally no textbook to teach it with, I'm not sure it matters whether they're all retired or not, because they ain't got anything to teach from. And it tells you that you've got tremendous challenges when it comes to the international area. You're basically starting from ground zero. And so there does need to be some forward-looking, long-term strategy with where the board expects to go in the long term. You can't. This is not something where you can just turn on a light switch and tell everyone go jump there, because there's a lot of difficulties with that. You got the small auditing firms that also don't have the expertise. I've surveyed a number of them, and there's literally no expertise. And at a time when we're debating whether or not there's enough competition in the industry, all you'd have to do is switch to international, and you could almost guarantee that a lot of smaller CPA firms would be immediately disadvantaged and become uncompetitive because they just don't have the skill set, and there's no way to go get the skill set right now, quite frankly, out there. So it does need some long-term strategy and planning, and I just don't see that coming out of this group. It's certainly not on what we're seeing today at all, and I'd urge you to step back and start thinking about that, because otherwise we're going to end up with a disaster as people try to rush something that just won't work, and quite frankly it'll end up like AS2 and AS5, and I don't know that many people would say that's a process they'd want to go through again. On the standard agenda itself, a number of these things have been up on the screen for a number of years. Things like the specialist and related parties and confirmations have been things that have been talked about in the past. It would be nice if, for once, the PCLB, after 5 years of being in existence, really could move forward with some standards and get some accomplishments such that a year from now we see some actions on these. One of my concerns is I think the board very appropriately started off on the right foot saying it was going to set the standards and not have the profession set the standards, and I think that was absolutely the correct decision. But the standard is the profession has moved forward and improved standards over that time, and in the last year issued a number of standards that were improvements to what are now the interim PCLB standards. And so rather than being a leader, the board has become clear-cut, undeniably a follower at this point in time. And that's not to say, and I don't think the board should just automatically go adopt those or go adopt international standards, but I think the board needs to seize the reins back again and become the leader, because quite frankly on this front I would have to give you a D at best for the performance over the last 5 years. And I would like to see this list, see next year this list where a number of these things are crossed off as having been accomplished and getting improvement, moving forward on some of those areas the auditing standards board has worked on, and see how those rack up. I don't see anything here that says, you know, how these relate to where the ASB has gone on their standards and improvements, so I don't know how that works. And whether this is going to leave us in greater differences and divergence there. The other thing is Ernie mentioned about the international standards and how they compare to the U.S. standards. I'd reiterate what Ernie said. It would be nice to have an educational session at which, at a minimum, people come back and provide a SAG with a description of the differences between the U.S. and international standards, so that people can have a better understanding and get a better grasp around those, as well as education on how those are enforced internationally, because if you got no enforcement, we of course know you got no standards, and that's not been an uncommon event overseas. So,
John White.
Thanks, Tom. I thought maybe if I could give you a couple of comments to the XBRL issue or question from the commission perspective. There was a press conference in September that you alluded to when Chairman Cox laid out a number of things, but you kind of had to be there to hear the Q&A to get the full picture of what he said. He basically asked the staff, Conrad, Silvana, myself, and the whole across the SEC staff, to provide a rulemaking proposal recommendation in the spring and with the possibility of leading to a final rule in the fall of next year about the possible required use. I use the word required versus voluntary use, but the possible required use of XBRL by U.S. filers. And so that's the mandate that we've gotten on the staff. The obvious question from that is at least one of the obvious questions is what has to be filed. And if you step back today, the financial statements that come in with footnotes and an audit opinion come in HTML or ASCII, but they come in, I guess I'd say, effectively as a paper copy, or at least it's a rendered version that you can look at. And to just give you at least the one model that we're thinking about would be that going forward, you would, in the sort of fully implemented XBRL world, what would still be coming in would be that, I'll call it the paper copy, and that the audit opinion would speak to that paper copy, and there'd be a specific disclaimer with respect to the underlying XBRL tags, the underlying XBRL file. But obviously the XBRL file would come into the SEC EDGAR system, which leaves us with the extremely important question of reliability with respect to the XBRL data tag file if there is a auditor disclaimer with respect to that. So we would then be looking at the possibilities of how we would get to a level of reliability with respect to that. We're thinking very broadly of different choices there. Obviously, an attestation standard of some sort would be one choice, either, on a voluntary basis that could be available, but there you could have variations in liability. We have things like furnished and filed. There could be other alternatives. We've got three or four that we're thinking about, and you might do them in combination to provide a level of reliability with respect to the XBRL data tag part of that. But anyway, I just to kind of frame this, that is at least one line of thinking that we've got on this, on the XBRL topic.
Thanks, John. That was very helpful. Howard Johnson.
Thanks, Tom. I just want to make a couple comments on two subjects, and I guess join the somewhat thundering herd in applauding the thought of moving to one set of international auditing standards. I spent most of my career and a lot of my time in internal auditing and with the Institute of Internal Auditors, and I guess that organization has been fortunate. They've had one set of global standards from the beginning. With that, though, comes some challenging things. It's been discussed, how do you monitor adherence to those standards, both on an individual and a firm basis? You need it, but how do you do it? I know with the IIA, the one regarding making sure firms are adhering to that to the IA standards is especially challenging right now. The other one, the certified internal audit exam, is pretty well acknowledged worldwide. And then on the second subject, which Arnie brought up about the clean sheet, and Lynn talked about the PCAOB being 5 years old and several others, once in a while it's good to sit back and take a look at maybe the blue sky and perhaps think about a strategic renewal process. I don't know if you've had one here with the PCAOB, but as I look at a lot of the standard-setting priorities here for the coming year, the kind of like tactical projects that need to be done, then when you think about things like moving to an international auditing standards, that's more of a strategic issue that obviously you can't do yourself. Maybe you can help the international world get that way. So anyway, it's just a thought. Thanks.
Damon Silvers. Damon, your mic, please. Thanks.
Yeah, take the hint. I want to sort of respond to what Lynn said about the. I'm not handing out grades, but I think that the board and the commission have been through this very strenuous period in relation to 404 and AS5, and it took a lot of resources and a lot of leadership focus, and the outcome I think was very good, there were very high stakes in that effort, in that situation, involving the ability of the system of investor protections put in place after Enron to be sufficiently flexible to respond to data coming from the outside world, and to be also tough enough to withstand political assault. And I think from all perspectives that worked out very well, as near as we can see. I mean, of course, we'll have to see what now happens as it's implemented, as AS5 is implemented. In that context, I think there have a number of people sort of on the investor side of the equation have been concerned that that unavoidably the board's overall standard-setting agenda has been set back a bit. And that is a concern of ours, I think, broadly, and I sort of would echo Lynn's view that it would be a very good idea to get moving on those items. However, I think it's really important that so in a way I'm sort of echoing what Lynn's saying, but I'm less critical of the board, frankly. I think it's extremely important that the board assert that the board is the standard setter here, and that there is no basis looking at the record of the last few years for anyone to claim that really that we ought to revert to the pre-Sarbanes-Oxley regime in which various industry bodies set their own standards. It continues to concern me that people will look for excuses to try to revert in that direction. I would really strongly urge the board to take up the authority you have, now that the sort of running room is clear and that the large task associated with AS5 is completed. I think that's what investors and the public are expect and hope for, and there's really no reason not to do it. I think you had a very good excuse, frankly, in the last 18 months or so for focusing on AS5 was a right decision. Now it's time to move on and really ignore any voices that are telling you that either because you've been busy, that other people that you ought to delegate back to the very people that you were created to delegate away from.
I don't see any other name tents up. Now, last year, remind you, I ended up cutting off this discussion before it was over, so I allocated a little bit more time this year. I know we haven't heard from everybody, so Ernie Baugh, thanks. Anyway, I would encourage you, if you haven't spoken, if you have any general observations about our priorities, I sure would like to hear them. Thanks, Ernie.
While you may not delegate the standard-setting process back to the individuals that or the organizations that you took it away from, I think it would be a very good idea if you took what is probably some good work that they've done, look at it very closely, and maybe adopt it. I will tell you that currently I'm getting questions about auditing private companies under PCAOB standards because it's looked on as possibly a low-cost alternative. Now, I don't believe that should be the case, but that's exactly what's coming up. The other thing I would encourage the staff to think about is possibly going through the same process the FASB has recently gone through in a codification project, and bring the standards and practices of working on public companies into a more reasonably researchable database. Thank you.
Arnie Hanisch.
Yeah, Tom, just a couple more points, maybe just to, you know, get on the record as far as areas that I think there needs to be some review by the board, some things that we've talked about in the past. Required communications with audit committees. I think that as we have observed, there's a lot of boilerplate information that gets put into required communications with audit committees by the auditing firms, and it's a voluminous document, and I really question whether or not it's serving the purpose for what it was intended, and maybe there's a way to relook at that, again, take a fresh look at what those required communications are and how effective they are. The other area would be in the area of representation letters. I think representation letters have gotten out of control as far as their length and breadth and depth, and auditors are throwing everything into the rep letter from the kitchen sink, and again, as to whether or not they are effective, and the depth and length of those letters is become untenable, I think. People are just really, again, it's an area of effectiveness that I think the board needs to, at least the staff ought to, at least as you're looking at interim statements and taking a fresh look at auditing activities, those are areas. And then I guess the final point would be, I really think that there ought to be more opportunity to dialogue with working groups where the preparers, the issuers, and the auditing firms under the auspices of the PCOB staff maybe have the opportunity to come together and have more dialogue as to the approach to the various auditing standards. My perspective is that the way things have been set up over the last 4 or 5 years, because of the mandate that you represent police the auditing profession, that you've been reluctant to bring the groups together, the preparers and the auditors together, to really, at least in my mind, find a common ground and a more effective way to go about performing their activities. I would encourage really more cohesiveness in that area. I think you'd get a better product.
Lynn Turner.
I actually like reading those long rep letters. It tells you where the auditors are a little bit nervous. And if the CFO is nervous about signing it as an audit committee chair, I get nervous myself. So I don't know what's behind Arnie and the long rep letters. But anyway, I want to pass on another comment that's along the lines of what Ernie said earlier, though. If not the leading educator in the auditing field, and certainly the leading researcher in auditing in the United States today, has passed on to me that he now no longer teaches PCAOB standards in his auditing class. He has excluded them and dropped them. And in his communication to me, he said the reason is because the quality of the other standards is higher now. And I think that's a sad commentary in and of itself, that you've got that going on in probably one of the top three universities in the country now, that they no longer teach PCAOB standards because they're not sufficiently high quality when measured against the other ones.
Rebecca McAnally.
Thank you. Just very briefly, I think it is more than abundantly clear that we have some problems, some questions, some issues that we're all concerned about that are of almost staggering proportions, with very long-term and deep ramifications. I also think we all recognize that currently there is not sufficient responsible, authoritative, and accountable infrastructure to fully address this range of problems that we're facing. We recognize that the PCAOB, despite all of the excellent work that they've done, have under the statutes limited authority. However, in thinking about this, I don't know where else sufficient expertise and experience might reside to address all of these problems. We cannot have a scattered, disjoint effort in attacking the problems. I think we have to have an overarching thought leadership and a cohesive solution that puts all of the pieces together. And so I would encourage the board, despite the limited role that it might have, an example was given education, but there are other things as well, to consider starting such a dialogue and providing some thought leadership to help bring all of the parties to the table and to attack the problems. Thank you.
John Morrissey.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. couple of comments. Number one, in terms of some of the observations that have been made about the progress of the staff and the standards that have been set, I think how quickly we forget the political and operational headwinds that this organization faced. That and to tackle a standard as so broad and so difficult and have actually executed on that goal, I think they really you really ought to be commended for a job well done, because it was a tough standard to get out. And having lived through that, having lived through it from a preparer standpoint, it's a very effective standard. I think the staff guidance all along the way was very, very helpful. And it was just a tremendous headwind that the group faced. And I think that it's not surprising that the progress on some other areas perhaps hasn't been as swift as some would like. But having said that, I think, so in some respects, the honeymoon's over, and we've got a list up there that looks quite familiar to me, at least in terms of some of the topics that were up here in the past. And I just stop at the very first one, which is fair value, which is something that is very troubling to me in terms of the operational issues associated with it, the operational questions that are flying around now as people are struggling to try and figure out how to implement this thing. And then I figure, well, if there's operational issues, there are going to be auditing issues as well. And I think that the sooner we get a game plan out there for the auditors to be able to follow, so that there's clear guidance in terms of what needs to be done, so much the better, because otherwise you're going to be in a position of not sitting here trying to be proactive about how to deal with this, but you're going to be looking at it in terms of how do we go about band-aiding the wounded. From my perspective, the priorities are great. They're spot on, but really the first one up there to me is the one that really has got to get some attention very, very, very quickly.
Dick Dietrich.
Thank you. In thinking about future meetings and this issue that I have again with education, one of the things that might be helpful for you to share with us at a future meeting would be the ongoing education process for members of the inspection team. They have a very challenging role because they have to maintain currency in accounting standards and in auditing standards. And so as I think about it, in a way, they have the most difficult role of any accounting professional, because they then have to know everything that the accountants do, that the auditors do, and then they have to know how to do their reviews on that so they can do their inspections. And so it may not be that big a deal, but I'm sort of thinking, how do you do that? And so I'm just curious, maybe if there's a half-hour briefing that you could give us at a future meeting, that would be helpful.
Leroy Dennis.
You know, I listened to everything that's said today, and I agree with all of it. When I look at the list of action items, I think you become guilty of the same thing we all do. We look at the next year with rose-colored glasses as what we think we can accomplish, and at the end of the year we look back and have reasons why we didn't, and they're all pretty valid. I would suggest the number one thing you do is look at that action plan for the current year, and really prioritize which ones of these you can get accomplished in the current year and take the ones off that you can't. Let's not set expectations that we're going to do something on specialist when we're not going to be able to get to it this year. Let's set it for 08 or 09 or whenever that's appropriate. The other one I would tell you, and maybe somewhat radical, is, you know, we could also look at, there's a lot of resources out there. We have the educators, we have the Auditing Standards Board, we have the IAASB, and maybe we can partner this out a little bit between all those groups, because they are talented people, and in my mind, the PCAOB staff doesn't have to write all these standards. They certainly have to approve them all. And so if we use the IAASB to say, why don't you tackle the specialist issue or the fair value issue, and we'll provide some oversight and ultimately approve and tweak as we need to, we could maybe get more things accomplished because we'd have more resources.
Bob Tirola.
Thanks, Tom. This comment may or may not be relevant to the board and its official jurisdiction, but it seems to me you have a very daunting task under our system where we really are looking to the auditing profession to provide the quality assurance of our financial reporting and all of the standards, qualifications, deliberations all seem to focus on auditing. Yet the preparer community is operating without any comparable standards. And it seems to me until the preparer community also has to, live up and be qualified in a similar way, auditing in the quality is going to be quite difficult.
Cindy Richardson.
I, too, would like to applaud the PCAOB for all that it has gone through with the revision from AS2 to AS5. That's taken a lot of resources. But I would encourage, as others have said around the table, for PCAOB to use this now as an opportunity to assert its leadership role again and use the authority that it's been given. And with the challenges, particularly if the SEC is permitted to change the rules so that U.S. companies can elect to use IFRS as opposed to U.S. GAAP, that will change the entire landscape. And I think the PCAOB needs to start thinking long-term strategically now to position itself to stay in a leadership role. And I think fair value is one of those instances where that could happen. IASB has a project on fair value at the present time, but they acknowledge that U.S. is ahead of them with FASB 157 and, in fact, have explicitly stated that the 157 standard is better in terms of the disparate guidance in IFRS at the present time. So if you would look strategically at where there are other opportunities to assert leadership, I think that would be very beneficial. Because if, for example, the reconciliation recommendation by the SEC is approved and it's eliminated, I mean, you just heard around this table with a number of experts basically saying, we're not even aware of what the material differences are between U.S. GAAP and IFRS. So I would highly encourage you to do an educational session for us and others and make those materials widely available so we can intelligently discuss and debate the issues as we move forward.
Christy Wood.
I'd like to echo a number of comments that have been made here, but in particular, CalPERS gets the luxury of sometimes being involved in a number of these very large groups that take on many issues. And my observation is just that if you don't focus on, you know, things that are really that you need to do, you can just get bogged down in so many, many things. And with such a large group, I think that there are a lot of things that are nice to do, but focusing on those things which you really need to do. From my perspective, I think this issue of convergence with IFRS and U.S. GAAP is absolutely critical that we, you know, get through that in as good a shape as we can. And that, from my perspective, a laser-like focus on the critical things that approach the PCAOB in the next few years would be in order.
John Kellis.
Yeah, just a quick point. I wanted to take up the point made by someone down at the far right there about resources. And I think, Tom, you come to the annual meeting of some of the major auditing standard setters. And one thing which always strikes me is that there is a fantastic amount of resource in the standard setting business, if I can put it that way. The question which has bothered me over the years is, are we all making best use of our own resources, or to what extent are the reinvention of the wheel? And one thing that certainly comes up internationally is there's quite a lot of demand for implementation guidance, particularly from smaller practitioners. And I'm very sympathetic to that. I'm not sure that we have the resources ourselves to provide it, but I do feel that amongst all the standard setters, we probably do have the resources. But I think that there tends to be a tendency for the standard setters to say, well, you know, we've got enough to do with setting the standards, and you find that there are 10 or 12 standard setters around the table, and none of them are just terribly keen to dip their toe into this water. Well, that may be right, given their respective priorities, but I still think there's so much resource and talent there that they can draw on that maybe somehow over the years there is a better cooperative way of working that avoids some duplication and perhaps can produce some more authoritative other guidance, which certainly, I know in the US there is a lot of such guidance, but internationally there probably is less than there could be.
Sam Ranzilla.
Tom, Bob, I will use the C word, because I do think it is important, and I think being an observer to different standard setting is interesting, but until you develop a plan, I'll use an overworked term, roadmap, if you will, to the setting of standards on a global basis. I think one can argue that there's a fairly compelling case for one set of globally accepted accounting standards, and we'll debate that here in the next rest of the day, but it's hard to believe that there isn't even a more compelling case for a single set of auditing standards. And in fact, the largest firms base their audit methodology on the international auditing standards. That's our base that we begin with, and then we move on from there jurisdiction by jurisdition. And to Damon's point, I don't think I heard anybody today say, let's go back to where we were in the year 2000 and let the auditing profession write the auditing standards. But there is a lot of really good work being done that we ought to have a roadmap, if you will, on how the PCAOB is going to play in that global environment. And being an observer, I think, is good, but maybe it's time to take that next step and develop something more strategic along the lines of where we are, because I think what you're hearing today is that there's a fairly compelling case to move towards a single set of standards. And you're never going to get there by just showing up at a meeting and writing a couple comment letters.
Wes Williams.
Thanks, Tom. You know, many people see the advantages of a unified set of standards. I tried to avoid the C word. But several people have also commented on the caution of using a one-size-fits-all model. We've talked about it in terms of education models. We've talked about it in terms of the CPA certification and the need to recognize specialists. And I think this also applies to standard setting. And just want to encourage the board as it goes through these important priorities to consider the scalability issues. And this was certainly recognized in AS5, the recent guidance for smaller issuers. And I think as we look at some of these important audits setting, standard setting priorities, we tend to focus on the application to large multinational firms, but there are thousands of smaller issuers that need to have the same standards applied to it. So I just encourage you to think about scalability as we go through these.
David Julian.
Thanks. First, I would echo some of the comments around the board being very specific as to its priorities, identifying those that they feel they can accomplish. As a practitioner in the financial services industry this past quarter, their value is of significant importance, certainly to us, and getting clearer guidelines around that would be something that certainly I'd recommend focusing on. Specific to the comments around potentially separating the qualifications of those folks who can audit on an international basis versus domestic or so forth, I would only caution the board to think about the impact that that would have on the accounting firms as it relates to those that would be willing to play in that space, and therefore it would limit to some extent the number of firms that public companies such as ourselves who are international can select from, and the competitive nature that could have and the impact on that. So just ask to consider that as well. Thanks.
Okay, well, thank you, and thank you for that sort of second round of comments. I appreciate it. It looks like there are no other tent cards, name cards up, so I will call a break, and we are a bit ahead of schedule, so let's break until 10:45. We'll resume on IFRS.